أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. إن الذين كفروا لن تغني عنهم أموالهم ولا أولادهم من الله شيئا وأولئك هم وقود النار. كذب آل فرعون والذين من قبلهم كذبوا بآياتنا فأخذهم الله بذنوبهم والله الشديد العقاب. قل للذين كفروا ستغلبون وتحشرون إلى جهنم وبئس المهاد. قد كان لكم آية في فئتين التقطا فئة تقاتل في سبيل الله وأخرى كافرة يرونهم مثلهم رأي العين. والله يؤيد بنصره من يشاء إن في ذلك لعبرة لأولي الأبصار. زين للناس حب الشهوات من النساء والبنين والقناطير المقنطرة من الذهب والفضة والخيل المسومة والأنعام والحرث ذلك متاع الحياة الدنيا والله عنده حسن المآب. قل لا أنبئكم بخير من ذلكم للذين اتقوا عند ربهم جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار خالدين فيها وأزواج مطهرة ورضوان من الله والله بصير بالعباد. الذين يقولون ربنا إننا آمنا فاغفر لنا ذنوبنا وقنا عذاب النار. الصابرين والصادقين والقانتين والمنفقين والمستغفرين بالأسحار. شهد الله أنه لا إله إلا هو والملائكة أولو العلم قائم بالقسط والملائكة وأولو العلم قائما بالقسط لا إله إلا هو العزيز الحكيم. Although I started reciting the verse 11, but later on I remember that we have already done the verses 11, 12 and 13, and today we are going to study the verses 14 onwards. قَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ آيَةٌ فِي فِيَتَيْنِ الْتَقَطَى. Certainly there was for you a sign in the two armies which encountered each other, one army fighting in the way of Allah and the other disbelieving, whom they saw with their own eyes to be twice as many as themselves. Thus Allah strengthens with His aid whomsoever He pleases. In that surely is a lesson for those who have eyes. Fair seeming to men is made the love of desired things, women and children, and stored up heaps of gold and silver, and horses of mark, and cattle and crops. That is the provision of the present life, but it is Allah with whom is an excellent home. Say, shall I inform you of something better than that? For those who fear God, there are gardens with their Lord, beneath which streams flow. Therein shall they abide, and pure mates, and Allah's player. And Allah is merciful, and is merciful of His servant. And Allah is merciful of His servants. Those who say, Our Lord, we do believe, forgive us therefore our sins and save us from the punishment of the fire. The steadfast and the truthful and the humble and those who spend in the way of Allah and those who pray for pardon in the latter part of the night. Allah bears witness that there is no God but He, and also do the angels and those possessed of knowledge, maintaining justice. There is no God but He, the Mighty, the Wise. In verse 14, the word fear has been described as armies, has been translated here as armies, but in reality it is not the best translation of this word fear. Fear means jama'ah, and far means to incline towards someone, to join someone. To incline not to incline for the sake of support and joining. So fear means an organized group of people who lean on each other for mutual support and get mutual strength from each other. So two groups, well-organized groups, this is the literal translation, and not the armies, but because it is used in the context of a war, so an army, the army also has these qualities, so this translation could not be declared as wrong, but it is not the literal one. There is no other particular word to be specially explained, I think. But there is one particular part of this verse which needs special attention. وَأُخْرَى كَافِرَةٌ يَرَوْنَهُمْ مِثْلَهِمْ رَيَلَانِ But before this, I remind you that this verse refers to an earlier battle which played the most pivotal part in the ultimate victory of Islam, that is called the Battle of Badr. It took place about 1 year from the time of Hijrah, and in that particular battle, the foundation for the future victory of Islam was laid against the Meccans. And this is the battle about which we find a prophecy in Isaiah 17, as far as I remember. And in that prophecy, it was clearly said, the person who will have to flee his home is mentioned, will be offered water and bread. And later on, the host that will be defeated and uprooted, and the grandeur of Kedar would be lost, and very few of their bowmen would be left intact. You know, that sort of that prophecy is so clear about this battle of Badr, and it is so specific, it can't fit any other historical event but that particular battle of Badr. Kedar is the name of the forefathers, is one of the forefathers of Quraysh. So, Kedar ki hashmat jati rahegi is the translation in Urdu. The grandeur and might of Kedar will be totally destroyed. So, that is the battle to which this verse is referring. And it refers to a particular character of this battle, where both the hosts, the opposing hosts, saw things not in the true, in the correct perspective, but there was an element of illusion about their observation of the enemy. And both underwent the similar illusion. Why it so happened and in what did it result, this is to which this part of the verse is referring. It says, وَأُخْرَى كَافِرَةٌ يَرَوْنَهُمْ مِثْلَ رَايَلْ مِثْلَهُمْ يَرَوْنَهُمْ مِثْلَهِمْ رَايَلْ عَيْنْ. Of course, there is one host which is fighting for the sake of Allah, in the way of Allah, and there is another host which is disbelievers. يَرَوْنَهُمْ مِثْلَهِمْ رَايَلْ عَيْنْ. They see them twice as much as themselves, apparently. Rayal An here is translated with their own eyes. Why? Here as well as in the commentary, which is referred to as five-volume commentary, it is mentioned that Rayal An here is expressed specifically. Of course, everybody sees with his eyes. Why particularly should the Holy Quran say with their own eyes? So they are inclined to believe that this is because to differentiate this event from a vision, an illusion. They said they actually saw them. It was not a vision, twice as much. But Rayal An, as far as I understand, can be translated as apparently, seemingly. So this is what it means here, in my opinion. Seemingly they appeared twice, they were not actually twice as much. But the other part, which is to be resolved, is a bit complicated and involved. According to Hazrat Musleh Maud, there are eight possibilities open to us for translating this part of the verse. First of all, who are those who see others? Which group is mentioned here as the subject of this vision? Yaraunahum, whom may refer to the Muslims, or it may refer to the disbelievers. So that is, there are two possibilities open. If the Muslims are objects, subject of this vision, then of course the meaning would be different, and vice versa. يَرَوْنَهُمْ, whom do they see? Themselves twice as much as the enemy, or the enemy twice as much as themselves? You see? So by permutation combination, Muslim Maud enlarged the possibilities to the maximum of eight. There are eight possibilities available to us of translating this verse, because they have not been specified, and one can easily refer the infer different different objects from this verse, which are indicated in as yaraunahum. Now, out of the eight possibilities, Imam Razi dispels those which refer to the Muslims as seeing, or subject of seeing. He says, because it is as because the word yaraunahum is situated in just a juxtaposition of the word kafiratun, so kafiratun must be the subject of yaraunahum. And it means that although the Muslims were small in number, the enemies saw them twice as much. And twice as much, according to him, refers to the number of the Muslims, not to the number of the disbelievers. That is to say, they saw them twice as much, instead of counting them to be 313 as they actually were, they appear to these disbelievers to be 626 some. And according to Muslim Maud, various permutations and combinations are not only possible but can carry significant messages. That be so, but personally I believe that because this reverse refers to a particular event which has already been referred to in a different place and where the same phenomenon also has been referred to, so why not take help, aid from those verses and try to resolve the situation in the light of that muhkam. This would become mutashabih as compared to that muhkam reference, which is much clearer than this place. So this is why it has the words have been saved and economized, because already the Holy Quran had referred to this event in another place, which says, I'm quoting from Surah Anfal 45, وَإِذْ يُرِيكُمُهُمْ إِذْ إِلْتَقَيْتُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِكُمْ قَلِيلًا وَيُقَلِّلُكُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِهِمْ لِيَقْضِيَ اللَّهُ أَمْرًا كَانَ مَفْعُولًا وَإِلَى اللَّهِ تُرْجَعُ الْأُمُورُ. And remember that great event or encounter when He, that is God, made them appear to you as fewer than they actually were, and made you appear to them fewer than you actually were. So that is to say, a balance was created, psychologically balance was created between the two, in a manner that this was advantageous in both cases to the Muslims, not to the enemy. And the following words, which say, "Inna fi zalika la ibrata li ulil absar," particularly indicate that there is something to be studied in this. A phenomenon is involved which has to be studied deeply and understood. So you have to be ulul absar before you really fathom the message, you comprehend what is lying underneath. So from that point of view, when you study this, the fact is that the Muslim army, composed of only 313 footmen plus a few odd horsemen included, but that was the number of horsemen was so small and insignificant that it did not alter the balance of power. I'll tell you exactly how they were made up. According to Imam Razi, Mushrikeen, that is the idolaters, were exactly 950. Out of them, 100 were horsemen. 700 were the camels. Which are used for wars, but specially trained camels. Each of the horsemen was armored. And as far as the Muslims are concerned, there were 313 in all. There were less than 100 camels available to them, and that was not to be for using them in the war, but to carry them across long some distances. Perhaps most of the camels in the enemy's camp were also used for traveling, not for war, but sometimes the Arabs also trained their camels for battles, and they took a very ferocious part in battles. And there were just 6 armors available to them and 2 horses. Now the Muslims were indeed very few compared to the enemy, and also not well attired and well equipped. So if they had seeing the enemy in his full might, 3 times as much, it was likely that they would be overawed and covered by the overwhelming number and strength and other advantages which the enemy had over the Muslims. So when they saw them smaller than what was reported, it boosted their morale. You know, when you consider your enemy to be three times, and suddenly it appears that no, they're not three times, they're twice as much only. So there is a natural kink in your morale upwards, and you consider yourself much better off than previously. So that mood was created, and on top of that, they must have remembered that God had promised them that in these early years of weakness, God promises you that if your enemy is twice the number of yours, then God will aid you and give you victory over your enemy twice as many as you are. So if you see them instead of 1,600 and some, because the Muslims were 313, so they were presenting exactly the picture in which God had given them a positive promise. So they must have been further strengthened in their approach to this, that war, in their psyche within, that number one, they're not as many as we thought they were, we were afraid they were, and number two, this is exactly the number which fits into the picture which God had created earlier. So the enemy is at our disposal. Now, on the contrary, as far as the enemy was concerned, according to the Holy Quran, that meaning is permissible here, which makes them see the enemy as smaller. Now, they were small already, and if they see them still smaller, further small, they don't take them seriously at all. They become a sort of laughing matter. 1,000 well-trained soldiers and warriors of Arabia, which were the very pride of Arabia, pitched against 300 ill-clad people and ill-trained, old and young and even children inclusive. And on top of that, add the further illusion as far as they were concerned, that they appeared, instead of 313, they appeared about half that number to them. They were small and scattered, or perhaps organized in a manner by the Rasul Akram Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, that they were placed at larger distances. And sometimes, instead of creating that an illusion of larger number, it creates the illusion of the host being small, even smaller in size. So, يُقَلِّلُكُمْ فِي أَعْيُنِهِمْ, that clinches the issue for us. They must have thought that they were just ordinary and meaningless. So they took it too lightly. And then the balance was just made right for the victory of these smaller people. This is the sign which is referred to, and also it is referred to that this is how Allah helps. Not unnaturally, but because Allah controls nature, so He commands the natural factors to be organized in a manner as that new organization and grouping of those factors is always advantageous to His side and not to the enemy side. And again, add to this the report of one of the surveyors of the enemy camp, who actually had examined that camp prior to the battle, prior to the engagement in the battle. Now, according to reports, he had exactly mentioned number 300 some to the enemy. So they were ready for meeting a number one-third their size. So if instead of one-third, appears to be one-sixth, then you can imagine how lightly they would be taking them. And moreover, what passed between their representative, who their spy, who went and examined the situation of the Muslim camp, when he reported that they are 313 or 300 some and they are very poorly equipped, the talk of the enemy camp already was that, well, we have got we have already carried the day with us. There's no question of their surviving this clash. But he disagreed with them. He said, look here, you will be defeated and you will be routed in this clash. And they said, why? He said, because I have not seen 300 some live people, but I have seen 300 some deaths facing you. They came here already decided that they will die in the cause of Allah. And those who have decided to die while they are living, as if they are already dead, they are taken for dead. It is very difficult to defeat them. You can defeat the living, but not the dead. And deaths written on their faces also may mean that they are angels of death. They are like, they are the instruments of death to you. So that also must have caused some terror in the enemy camp. Although they knew the number was very small, but when they saw them actually so meager and so small and insignificant, then suddenly that terror was taken away, that fled, and an opposite psychic condition was created within them, which was required for them to be defeated. That is how Allah organized things. Now the question is, why suddenly there seems to be an apparent departure from the subject which is being discussed here, and why is there any need for reference to the Day of Badr? Now if you read the preceding verse, قُلْ لِلَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا سَتُغْلَبُونَ وَتُوْشَرُونَ إِلَىٰ جَهَنَّمْ وَبِيسَ الْمِهَادِ. Tell those who disbelieve that they will certainly be overpowered and defeated. وَتُوْشَرُونَ إِلَىٰ جَهَنَّمْ, and gathered together in hell later on after death. وَبِيسَ الْمِهَادِ, and bad it is as a dwelling place. This verse was prophesied, in fact, that however great the enemy may be in number, it would be defeated. The number does not matter, does not count. Now, this could have been misunderstood both by the enemies of Islam and by the Muslims themselves. It had to be demonstrated, it had to be illustrated how this was to be happen, how this was to be brought about. So one way, one illustration was given in the following verse to the enemy, that Allah so arranges natural phenomenon that he does not have to break his own natural laws, and whatever happens ultimately, the victory belongs to his servants and not to the enemy. And the illustration is given in Badr, when the Muslims were the weakest in Arabia and the enemy was at its at the peak of its strength. So bit by bit, making chunks of the enemy here and there, gradually it was defeated in a progressive manner. That was the beginning of that ultimate victory of Islam, not the victory itself, but the foundation was laid. And Allah so organized that the enemy could not pitch its entire might together in the beginning. And the proportion, the ratio which was necessary for the victory of Islamic camp was always kept and organized by Allah. So, and that is one of the reasons why yuqallilukum is mentioned, not only on that particular event, but always the enemy takes the Muslims lightly, the believers lightly. And this is why it never pitches its entire might against them at one moment in the beginning. when it is really able to crush them, to stamp them out. So this phenomenon is mentioned here in full illustration, how Allah brings it about. Now, if all the might of the non-Ahmadi world, whether be it a Muslim non-Ahmadi or the other religions not belonging to Islam, if all their might was brought together, was permitted by God to be brought together to destroy Ahmadiyyat, imagine where you would be. You would need some supernatural help, visibly supernatural help. And in this world, Allah does not show that. So the Muslims are also told categorically that work for, earn for your survival, and don't lie in wait for supernatural things to happen your way. The nature would be controlled, certainly, by Allah. The victory will belong to you, but you will have to participate to the full. And always you will find yourself facing some dangers, so that each time, without fail, when you emerge victorious, you will remember that the victory was from God and not by your own doing. But as far as that supernatural concept of victory is concerned, that from heaven the enemy is stoned suddenly and you are, you emerge the conquerors, these things don't happen. If they could happen, they should have happened at the time of Hazrat Muhammad Mustafa Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, especially when in the early days of Islam, when he so needed them. So this is an illustration for all times to come, for all ages, and also an illustration which fits in perfectly with the past of religious encounters with the non-religious forces. This has always been what has been happening, and this is happening now. You know, gradually the enemy is awakening to the growing might of Ahmadiyyat and greater possibilities of their emerging victorious or gaining more ground here and there. And gradually they are opening eyes to it, and whenever they do it, they find ourselves having advanced much further than the time when they could have, they could have defeated it. And every time, after every encounter, this is exactly what the enemy confesses. Look at the previous history of Ahmadiyyat. At every such encounter, after every such encounter, they write, they analyze the causes of their failure and frustration, and they always mention this factor, that we were a bit too late, we were a bit too late, we were a bit too late, like the Pharaoh was a bit too late in pursuing Moses. And this is also why Pharaoh is mentioned, Kadabe Ale Pharaona. He was much mightier than the encounter between the Muslims and the Mushrikeen presents a picture of. So Allah saved them in another way. Allah took them away without an encounter. And there too, the concept of being too late, taking them too lightly, I mean, they are living here, we can capture them anytime, I mean, they can't run away from us. Where can they go, and this and that, you know. All these ideas made them too sure of themselves. So this is the common feature and common phenomenon which is repeated by God every time such encounters take place between the weak and the apparently mighty. Then this verse is followed by the verse 15, زُيَّنَ لِلنَّاسِ حُبُّ الشَّهْوَاتِ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ وَالْبَنِينَ وَالْقَنَاطِيرِ الْمُقَنْتَرَةِ مِنَ الزَّهَبِ وَالْفِضَّةِ وَالْخَيْلِ الْمُسَوَّمَةِ وَالْأَنْعَامِ وَالْحَرْثِ ذَلِكَ مَتَعُ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَاللَّهُ عِنْدَهُ حُسْنُ الْمَعَابِ. زُيِّنَ لِلنَّاسِ, it is made fair seeming, is the translation made rendered here, but is made attractive, is made beautiful and charming. What is made beautiful and charming and so attractive and fair-seeming is hubbu shahwati min nisa'e. The love, hub means love, and shahwat means also desire. And hubbu shahwat in this combination means the love of desires. Now this combination is not new to the Holy Quran, and also not unknown to the Arabs, who have been using it in various places. I mean, right from the history of the early history of Arabia, this is a common usage of Arabia. And in the Holy Quran, it is used elsewhere with reference to Hazrat Dawood's love of horses. Ahbabtu hubbal khayre. I love the love of horses. So, because one's desires and loves for particular things are widespread in different directions, but out of these inclinations and loves, sometimes some people particularly find themselves vulnerable in one particular area. That becomes their weakness. So although this love of whatever is mentioned afterwards is common to everyone, or love of everything which is of gain, but to emphasize that this is all that they need, all their intention, all their powers are directed in this direction and channelized in this direction. The same subject has been expressed differently in Surah Kaf, also in application to the Christian civilization in the latter days. Dalla sayyuhum fil hayati dunya. All their efforts and energies are lost in the worldly affairs, in materialism. So this is expressed with some detail. What has been expressed there in shorter terms, dalla sayyuhum fil hayati dunya, this is an enlargement of the same statement. Zuyyana lin-nasi hubbu shahwati min an-nisa'i, the love of desires for women is made beautiful to them, is made charming to them. Wal banina, and sons. Baneen here may mean literally the sons, and may mean just large number of populace too. A people who are more powerful numerically, they have a greater number of baneen, you know. So baneen collectively may mean a numerical superiority, a numerical advantage over others. But in this particular context, it may mean nisa wal baneen, women and children generally, or women and male issues. And it may mean shahwat, may mean desire, and may also mean lust. So with that connotation, lust, it may mean the lust for women is made attractive to them. Here, annas would not mean all the people of the earth, but here annas would specifically mean the enemies of Islam, or a particular people who are worldly wise, who are materialistic in their approach, not men as such. So in the general terms, this verse can be all comprehensive. It may describe human nature as such, because the Holy Quran has used this expression elsewhere to include all the mankind as such. These are the inclination and dispositions of men in general, that is the human beings in general. But also the same expression zuyyana or zina has been specifically used to apply to people belonging to Christianity, And in the same manner, the word zuyyana has been used elsewhere in the Holy Quran, to which I'll come a bit later. So you can give it different inflections. And with every inflection, a new meaning would appear before you, which would be valid. All these meanings can be contained by this verse together collectively and separately, individually as well. Hubbu shahwat min an-nisa' wal banina. Here banina, in this context of lust, would mean that they do not only desire women, but also desire young boys. And this is also a picture of a perverted society. Particularly, notice nowadays, or very much aggravated nowadays in the Western civilization, also in many Eastern civilizations. But this is a disease of perversion. وَالْقَنَاطِيرِ الْمُقَنْطَرَةِ. Heaps of wealth are referred to as qanatir. And when the Arabs say, the Arab use this expression, qanatir al-muqantara, elsewhere also in the Holy Quran has used this same expression vis-a-vis other words, it means heaps upon heaps of wealth. Wealth added to wealth. So here also, lust perhaps would be more appropriate meaning of this, but in general terms too, man is never satiated as far as the earning of wealth is concerned. Although his expenditure may be limited according to his ideologies and his bringing up and so on, social education, some may spend that wealth differently from others. But as far as desire of amassing more wealth is concerned, this is common to man as such. وَالْخَيْلِ الْمُسَوَّمَةِ. Now two things, in fact four words have been so far mentioned, but two inclinations and dispositions have so far been enumerated. شَهْوَاتِ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ وَالْبَنِينَ, that makes one. Or hubbu shahwat min an-nisa' wal banina wa hubbu shahwat min al-qanatir al-muqantarati wa hubbu shahwat ya hubbu al-qanatir, we should say hubbu al-qanatir al-muqantarati min al-zahab wal fizza. Zahab and fizza, although they are two words, but they are controlled by al-qanatir al-muqantara as one commodity. Similarly, hubbu shahwat possesses refers to both nisa and banin in one bracket. So there are two items so far enumerated. Hubbu shahwat min an-nisa wal banina, the love of lust or love of desire for women and children, and the love of qanatir al-muqantarati, heaps upon heaps of wealth in the form both of gold and silver. So fizza here becomes descriptive, such as, you know, gold and fizza, such as women and children and so on. So that indicates a class is mentioned. But after these, three different objects are mentioned independently, separately. So all together they will make five. Wal khayl al musawwama is one. Wal aname is the second. Wal harth is the third. So 3 + 2, all together five objects of man's desires, or five objects of man's lust are mentioned here. ذَلِكَ مَتَعُ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. This is all the provision of this world, that is, as against the hereafter, here and in this world. This is all man lives for. Wallahu indahu husnul ma'ab, as far as Allah is concerned, with Him is the most excellent place of return. The word ma'ab needs a little explanation. Ma'ab is not a place of return which can you know, which can include the inanimate. For instance, as against Inna Lillahi wa Inna Ilaihi Raji'un, Raja is a word which is all inclusive. Marja is a place which can be called a place of return for everything, whether it is animate or inanimate, thinking or non-thinking. But Ma'ab particularly is mentioned in reference to thinking of living beings. The living beings who can think, if they return to a place that is described in Arabic as Ma'ab. The word Ma'ab is a noun which is indicative both of place and time. So Ma'ab means a place where all living beings, to which all living thinking, intelligent beings would return, or the appointed time when all such things would return to God. So that is a better place, a better concept of a world, which is the world hereafter, than this concept of the world of the materialists, which has been described herein. Now, Zuyyana Linnase, as I said, has been particularly used in application to the Christians. And that is used in Surah Kaf, where Christianity is described in the early verses of Surah Kaf in particular. And later on, they are referred to in the last verses of Surah Kaf in particular, and generally, Christianity is discussed in all over Surah Kaf in various ways and from various angles. There the Holy Quran tells us, Inna jalna ma alal orde zinatal laha li nabluwahum ayyuhum ahsanu amala. This is what is going to happen later on to the Christians. They are going to pursue the things of surface of the earth, which will be made so beautiful to them. All the things which are on the surface, superficial things of life, that is to mean, ma'al al-ardi zinatal laha means, they won't go deeper. They will have a quality of sheen about their civilization. They would pursue what is superficial and shallow, but it would be so beautiful because God has made that beauty to attract them, so that they are tried whether to follow this or more lasting values, to pursue weightier things of life or to pursue these things. So all their attainments are directed towards this. Now when you apply this verse, Inna jalna ma'al arde zinatal laha li nabluwahum ayyuhum ahsanu amala, then you will realize that everything apparently weighty and meaningful that they achieve is always misdirected in towards vain pleasures, and that is where they end up ultimately. If you study your facts and figures rightly about what is happening to the wealth of the West, you'll be surprised that most of it is used, as has been earlier mentioned, and would again be referred to in the Holy Quran in the following verses. The most of it goes towards the preparation for wars. And what is left is mostly spent for the pursuit of vain pleasures. So the wars have already been mentioned earlier, and the second object of their life, the ultimate object for which they would live and waste their lives here on earth, is being mentioned here. This is the sum total of their civilization and their achievements. Now, what is one more thing which is to be particularly noticed is, I mean, I want you to remind about one particular thing, and that thing is that in the 5-volume commentary of the Holy Quran, this word ruyina has been particularly discussed as to discover who is the object of ruyina, who made this as beautiful to them. In the 5-volume commentary, it is said that although God makes everything beautiful, but in this context, it is the Satan who is referred to. Now, if it is meant that because they will ultimately fall into the trap of Satan, and in the trial they would fail, then of course Satan could be referred to here. But because in the other place, in the same context of application to Christians, certain phases of Christian life, Allah Himself declares that inna wajalna ma ala ardi zinat Allah, we have made to appear beautiful whatever is on the surface of earth. So that shows that it is wrong to take this to mean that Satan is referred to here and not God. Those who fail in this trial, we can say that under the influence of Satan, they failed in this trial of saving themselves from undue attractions or being overwhelmed by these superficial attractions of life. That is okay. But it is God who made it appear beautiful to them for the sake of trial. This is made very clear in the Holy Quran in so many places. In context of the whole creation also it is mentioned. The same thing is mentioned. For instance, in Surah Mulk, the Holy Quran tells us, تَبَارَكَ الَّذِي بَيَّدَهِ الْمُلْكُ وَهُوَ عَلَىٰ كُلِّ شَيْنْ قَدِيرٌ الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةَ لِيَبْلُوَكُمْ أَيُّكُمْ أَحْسَنُ عَمَلًا. Although the word زُيِّنَا or زَيِّنَا is not used here, but yabluwakum ayyukum asanu amala is the common factor, and that trial is always made through this attraction in everything. If there were no attractions, there would be no trial, and life anyway would not be worth living. Even the believers have some attractions, and their attractions are mentioned elsewhere in the following verses. So zuyana should always be taken to refer to God, as I understand, and not to Satan directly, but as an ultimate result, of course, those who falter in this trial and fail, perhaps for them it was Satan who made it look more beautiful. And in this particular manner, the Holy Quran also refers this word to the Satan, that sometimes Satan makes things appear to be beautiful to people while they are not beautiful. So that context is not all comprising. That context is to a particular situation, and it should be understood and differentiated from this. When it is said زُيَّنَ لِلنَّاسِ, if all the mankind is referred to in this, as it can be, then only God could be the subject of this, because that includes righteous people as well as evil. It refers to a natural dispensation of mankind, a psychic phenomenon. So how could Satan have anything to do in the creation of this? But if it refers only to the evil people who fall prey to Satan's so-called exaggerated attractions, as elsewhere in the Holy Quran it is referred, only in that limited sense it can be referred to Satan and not generally speaking. Now we have some other commentaries of this verse which must be carefully examined. There is one tafsir under the title of Al-Bayan by Khaja Muhammad Abdullah Farooqi, who is the lecturer in commentary of the Holy Quran in Jamia Millia Islamia Aligarh. Generally speaking, the quality of this tafsir is good. It is a very good collection of the best excerpts from various older classical tafsir in one small place. You can come across all the various things which have been said, particularly the very best among them. And also, his logical discussion is quite good, I must say. But because of the lack of the teaching of the Imam of the day, he is expected naturally to falter more often than a guided man would ever falter. So, in this particular place, he has made a wrong inference. He says, "Zuyyina lin-nasi," although he's quite intelligent, the flight of his fancy is generally speaking in the right general direction, but his inference is not correct. He says, "Zuyyina lin-nasi hubbu shahawati." He says this is a description of the enemy of Islam, and he also positively agrees that this refers to the Christian civilization, particularly of the modern times. And he says that therein is given a glad tidings to the Muslims, that those who pursue these things, how can they become victorious over you, who are quite chaste in their habits and righteous, and because they are pursuing these things, so they have become weak, and the enemy is weakened as compared to you, because you are a people who strictly live a life of order and discipline under the teachings of the Holy Quran. So that means you would emerge stronger than an enemy who are pursuing the lustrous life of this earth. Now, apparently this is a very, very interesting and very attractive comparison made here, but does it hold water in reality? Is this exactly the picture of the modern times? Those people who are pursuing hubbu shahawat min an-nisa wal banin wal qanatir al muqantara, they are so powerful because of this that the Muslims as compared to them are absolutely meaningless in the material strength. In fact, they depend on them for their weaponry to a degree that even for buying a rifle they have to go to them, if not directly for a rifle, for industry which can make rifles, you know, or even cartridges. They have to lean upon them. So how could this be the meaning or the purpose of this verse? It is not so. In fact, this immense materialism creates a material power which is very hard to reckon with. And more you love your wealth and treasures, more you are inclined to defend it and become defense-minded and offense-minded as well, because if you have a lust for worldly things, then there are no moral inhibitions. The result is that you must amass more and more through right means or wrong means. So the wrong means one has to have recourse to wrong means as well. So by hook or by crook, through trade or through wars, you must amass more wealth and win more territories for your trade and bring more peoples of the earth under your sway. This is a natural result of this unreined and undisciplined desire for and lust for the worldly things. And this is exactly what has happened. The Muslims, as compared to the Christians, are at a disadvantage in two ways. Number one, they have a false concept of qanaa, which means that God will do everything for us and we don't have to do much here because we are promised everything, you know, and whatever has been provided to us by God is enough and we can make do with this. So why to seek for more and more? So they lose the race for creativity, for industry, for betterment of life and environment and so on and so forth. The result is that they are left far behind. And secondly, an age is described here in particular when you apply these verses to the future civilization as compared to the times of Ahmadullah, the civilization we are facing today, then of course the Muslims would no longer be pious themselves. So it is not piety as pitched against evil. It is a civilization which is being described here, which is overwhelming in influence and which has penetrated deep into the lives of other peoples as well. And the Muslims also, unfortunately, have followed them in their evil habits and not in their good habits. As far as the industry is concerned, for earning more and improvising your environments and the way of life, all that is left to the Christians. These are material things, we are not interested, you know, that sort of spirituality has that sort of wrong impression of spirituality is conceived by the Muslims in general. It doesn't apply to each individual, of course, but in general this is the state why we are left behind. And as far as the pleasures which are poisonous are concerned, without regard to their intoxication and evil effects, the Muslim world is generally following that. So they are at a double disadvantage rather than at an advantage because of this description of the Christian civilization. So it could not mean that at all. What it means has already been described. There is within this description a positive indication of their ultimate description, but not in the manner as has been understood by this scholar. In fact, when you become so materialistic, then you always prepare for wars. And you are destroyed in two ways. Number one, your over-love or over-evaluation of these superficial things of life makes you lose your balance, and your morality is destroyed more you pursue these things. More immoral you become, generally speaking. Your politics becomes immoral, your social system becomes immoral, your international behavior as well as internal behavior in your own countries tends to become more and more immoral and less disciplined. And because you love your achievement so much, so even at the cost of others, you go on amassing these things more and more. So capitalism develops on the one hand. And not only capitalism, but colonization is a direct result of these inclinations and tendencies. So imperialism is born out of capitalism and colonization. On the other hand, there are those who say that all these things are good and valid. The love and lust for these things is not what is wrong, but the distribution is wrong. So because there are no principles and moralities are involved, they want to grab all these things. Again, these are the objects, whether they are Christians or non-Christians. The atheists born out of Christianity. Still, the objects remain these things, with the result that the force, the same force, is adhered to and employed, not only for retaining these things, but for amassing more and more. Territorial wars are become a common feature of this life, an ordinary way of life. So this is what is going to destroy them ultimately. Not that because of this they will be weakened. They will become stronger and stronger with the amassing of wealth, naturally. And this is why no sane man can deny that wealth is power. And also the number is power. Numerically, you go stronger, you gain power. So in every respect, this is a description of powerful blocks, or powerful, if not blocks. I mean, ultimately we infer that this can be a description of blocks as well. But let me say, it is just a description of a growing power which is undisciplined and uncontrolled by any concept of morality or religion. A materialism which has totally lost its bearing and direction, where it is free for all, and whatever you can do to earn more of this world, you are permitted, and this becomes the philosophy of life, whatsoever your ideology be. This is essential common feature of the modern, of the ideologies of modern man. Now, as compared to this, we'll find in another verse following, after I think one or two verses, let me see. In the third verse from this, an opposite description of what has been illustrated here, of certain people who have qualities exactly to the opposite of what is being described here. But let's read the following verse first. قُلْ أَوْنَبِّيُكُمْ بِخَيْرٍ مِنْ ذَلِكُمْ لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ جَنَّاتٌ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارُ خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا وأزواج مطهرة ورضوان من الله والله بصير بالعباد. Say, shall I inform you of something better than that for those who fear God? But the verse itself goes further to say, for those who fear God, this translation says, those who fear God, there are gardens with their Lord, which means that in the Rabbihim Jannatun Tajri. This is how this the translator has read this. Now, it can be this verse can be translated differently with different pauses. If you put your pause after one word, the meaning would be slightly different. If you shift the pause further on and remove it and put it in the following, after the following word, then the meaning would be slightly different in enlarge or even different in connotation. So Imam Razi has done this to illustrate by showing the shift of pauses by let me explain how. قُلْ أَوْنَبِّكُمْ بِخَيْرٍ مِّنْ ذَلِكُمْ لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا. First he says, قُلْ أَوْنَبِّكُمْ بِخَيْرٍ مِّنْ ذَلِكُمْ. This is one pause which is also mentioned in every transcription of the Holy Quran with a toy, which means this is one part of the verse and you should pause here. Tell them or say to them, should I inform you of something better than this? And here, according to Imam Razi, whatever follows is a general description of that. That in every respect, whatever is described is better. Better not only for the believers, but better for everybody. So, لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا, after this pause, would mean particularly for the believers. They understand it, that this is better for them. But according to Imam Razi, it can be read running into, without a pause, running into this coming, the second part of the verse, as قُلْ أَوْنَبِّيُكُمْ بِخَيْرٍ مِّنْ ذَلِكُمْ لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا. Tell them or say to them, shall I inform you of something better than this for those who fear God? So that is the second meaning of the same verse, if you push the pause a bit further. And the third is, if you push the pause still further and read in the Rabbihim with the preceding statement, and not with the following statement. Now, in this translation which we hold, in the Rabbihim is read with the following statement and not with this preceding statement. This is why there is a difference of translation, which should be understood. So there are many possibilities of translations. Each one could be correct, but it would be one of the translations. So you can't say this is wrong. All you can say is that he has adopted one manner of translation and preferred it to the others. So in commentary, this is essential for the commentator to bring all the possibilities before you so that the same verse is seen in larger perspective by those who previously read it in a narrower perspective. So here it would mean مِنْ ذَلِكُمْ لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ. In this context it would mean that those people who fear Lord, not according to what they think, but according to what God considers them. Now, in the context of another verse, that don't declare yourself pious and righteous, Allah knows, man ittaqa. He knows better who is muttaqi and who is not. So don't harp upon your pieties and righteousness. Allah knows you right from the time of your being fetuses in the womb of your mothers. And He knows your weaknesses as well as advantages. So don't go on harping upon your piety and righteousness and so on. هُوَ عَلَمُ بِمَنِ اتَّقَى. He it is, that is God, who knows, who is muttaqi, who is righteous. So here, in the light of that verse, this is a very appropriate translation, that tell them or say to them, shall I inform you of things much better than this? لِلَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا. Here, although the things are much better anyway, but these things are created particularly for those who are righteous and God-fearing in the sight of Allah. Inda Rabbihim would mean in the sight of Allah. جَنَّاتٌ تَجْرِي مِنْ تَحْتِهَا الْأَنْهَارِ. These are the gardens of bliss underneath which the streams flow. خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا. They won't be transient. There would be a permanent way of life. وَأَزْوَاجٌ مُطَهَرَةٌ. And spouses who are made pure for them. وَرِضْوَانٌ مِنَ اللَّهِ. And the pleasure of Allah, that is, Allah would be pleased with them. وَاللَّهُ بَصِيرٌ بِالْعِبَادِ. And Allah sees His creatures, His servants, very clearly. So here, Basir also strengthens the inclination that the preferred translation should be in the sight of Allah. Allazina taqaw, those who fear God in the sight of Allah. Because Basir is a further reminder to us that not for the apparent muttaqeen, but who are truly muttaqi in the sight of Allah. This is verse 16 and verse 15. Let me read a passage from Wery, Reverend E. M. Wery, who leaves no opportunity unutilized to attack the Holy Quran wherever he can possibly attack. Always unjustified, of course, but sometimes makes it appear justified in the sight of those who are not well versed in Islamic teachings or Islamic philosophy. Under 15 he says, "Shall I declare unto you better things than this?" Now the number is 16 here in this verse because we include Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. But according to some Orientalists, Bismillah is not counted in the verses. So the verse he refers to is the one I have just read. This verse, taken in connection with the preceding, clearly shows that the joys of the Muslim heaven are carnal. The provision of the present life, which is women, gold and silver, horses, cattle and land, were such as could alone gratify the eager desire of an Arab in this life. Now he forgets that it is exactly the opposite of what the Holy Quran is claiming here. The Holy Quran is positively mentioning this is not the way of life of Muslims and believers. Of Arabs, perhaps, but the Arab of Jahiliyyah. Not the Arabs of the Islamic era. So, very cleverly, he gives, he stings every time, not once, but twice or thrice. Like, and even evil animals, sometimes if an animal strikes once, a serpent, and it can strike again, it would strike again. Some just bite once and then go their way. But some people are inclined towards attacking and venomously and viciously. So this is how he does it. Suddenly, he confuses or makes his reader get confused about Islam and the Arabs and Arabianism. No longer Islam is a religion to him. Islam is just a natural product of Arabian life, not a revelation from God. So he says, according to the Arab temperament. Now, thereby he serves two purposes. One of making Islam appear to be not a religion through revelation, but a religion which gives expression to the natural general habits and ways of Arabian life. So here, An-Nas, according to him, are just the Arabs and not the rest of the people. As if the rest of the people don't like these things at all. Only it is the Arab, poor Arabs, who have such desires, and all the rest of the world is just chaste and, you know, above these things. While it's the other way around, mostly speaking, particularly after the coming of Islam. And secondly, he achieves this purpose by referring to the Arabs and not getting involved in the controversy of Arabs before Islam or after Islam, because all the Muslim scholars have painted the picture of the pre-Islamic Arabs exactly in the same manner. So it becomes immediately acceptable. The reader, even if he's a Muslim, would immediately within his heart know that yes, I know the Arabs did do this. But if you read the Qasida of Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wassalam, Ya Aina Faizullahi wal Irfani, then you will know how dishonest he has been to Islam. Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wassalam has created both these pictures of the Arabs prior to Islam. They made a part of An-Nas, but a part of An-Nas which were not yet educated and cultivated by Islamic influences. And then Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wassalam goes on building the picture of the same Arabs after Islam. What transformation, what wonderful revolution had taken place. So that was Islam, and the Arabian dispensations were not Islam. But he, intentionally perhaps, because this is his habit of attacking Islam wherever he can and distorting images as best as he can. All these, according to him, asan or better, he says this means all these are to be infinitely multiplied amid the pavilions and gardens of paradise. What a distorted and diseased brain this man has, unfortunately. Imagine, no man who knows the ABC of Arabic can go to the length of such distortion. And as I told you earlier, these Orientalists are great scholars, worldly wise. They are definitely great scholars. They have spent their lifetimes in pursuit of material knowledge. Not the essence behind knowledge, but material knowledge. And Arabic was very well studied by these scholars. So he knows that here, bekhair does not mean more intensified. You know, khair here has been translated by this scholar as more intensified and more exaggerated. So what he claims is this, that the Holy Quran says that for the people of the earth, these things are the object of their lust and desire. But I tell you what, the same things would be intensified many, many times more and exaggerated and enlarged, and will be provided to you under the shades of heavenly gardens. So is that not a better bargain? 10 times more than this, the same things. But the Holy Quran positively decries this and positively declare these descriptions to be the descriptions applicable to a non-religious materialistic people. As against a description of the pious people and a concept of a heaven which does not have these things, does not have any lust at all whatsoever. So, azwajum mutahharatun indicates, makes the matter very clear to any reader, that it doesn't say women at large will be offered to you for you to pursue your lust. It says whoever would be made your partner would be mutahara. So a lustful man, what has he to do with a mutahara wife? I mean, his lust cannot be satisfied with such a description. And no qanatil muqantara zahaba wal fizra, only shadows of gardens. So what sort of heaven is described here in the Holy Quran as compared to this? Only it has cryptic meanings, it has underlying messages which can only be understood by those who are made mutahhar. لا يمسه إلا المطهرون. So for that one has to not only be a Muslim but a pious and muttaqi Muslim in the sight of Allah. Only then he can understand the import of the Holy Quran. So when the Holy Quran says ذَلِكَ مَتَعُ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا, it separates this class of pursuit of vain prayers and then says وَاللَّهُ إِنْدَهُ حُسْنُ الْمَعَابِ. What is with God is not this, but something much better. Not that more of this. But where he has said is that the Holy Quran means Husnul Ma'ab, Wallahu Husnul Ma'ab means God has many more of these things, so come to God and don't waste your attention or your lust on the worldly things. Kul, again the Holy Quran makes it further clear, Kul awanabbiyakum bikhairim min zalikum. This is not good. But what we have is much better. So this is a different class of things. And also elsewhere the Holy Quran has made it very clear, categorically clear, that the description of the Holy Quran, of heaven and hell, which we find on this earth, is not applicable to this earth. To the things and places of this earth, they are not similar. They may appear to be similar remotely, but they are not the same things. Now, this subject is so wide and vast that it would take a much longer time than advisable for me to consume here to explain in detail what the differences are and to what degree they occur and what is the nature of heaven as described by the Holy Quran. So a glimpse of that can be found and a fair glimpse of that can be found in Hazrat Masih Maud alayhi salatu wasalam's book Islami Usool Ki Philosophy. Although it comprises many other things along with this particular aspect, so he had to be brief. But in his brief address to this question as well, he has opened many doors and windows for our vision into the next world. So through doors and visions and windows, you can peep into the heaven from a completely different angle with a completely different perspective. And the Holy Quran does not need the help of other people to prove that this is what the Holy Quran meant. It is so explicit and so clear in those claims that if you refer the mutashabihat to muhkamat, in the light of muhkamat, everything becomes very clear that whatever is being referred to as jannat, gardens of bliss, and the milk flowing in the channels therein, and the wine, and the women, they are different thing altogether. Number one, the stress has to be made on the word azwaj. It is wrongly interpreted and absolutely wrongly interpreted by the Christian scholars to mean women. It is their lust which inclines them to interpret them wrongly and give them a distorted image. Azwaj is a neutral word which is equally applicable both to both partners, to both spouses, men and women alike. So it is not a heaven created for men, lustful men at all, as is understood or distorted, if not understood correct, by the Orientalists. someone interests, I mean. This means partners. And because there will not be any sex in heaven, so any sexual interpretation of this is a creation of a distorted mind and has nothing to do with the Holy Quran. Partners, of course, there would be. And without partners, the life is not worth living, whatever form of life it is. You must have companionship and partners. And to further clarify that there will be no lust involved, it says, Azwajum mutahharatun. The partners would be purified partners, not lustful. Secondly, wherever the Jannat is described, that is, heaven is described, there are always positive indications that that is not a carnal concept of heaven or gardens of bliss, but it is spiritual. For instance, when the wine is described, it is also described with the epithet tahura, sharaban tahura, la ghalun fiha, and so on and so forth. There are so many descriptions which positively make it clear that a wine which is not intoxicating, so what sort of wine that is? Non-alcoholic wine, which does not intoxicate. So those who leave wine, according to these Orientalists, for the sake of more wine in the hereafter, they were after all Arabs. They could understand what is being told to them, which is being promised to them. What was being promised in the words of these Orientalists is that what Allah told them, all right, leave wine here, we'll give you more wine, but it will not be intoxicating at all. Fantastic, unbelievable. How could those Arabs be duped and leave wine in the with one stroke of declaration of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam? In one night, when the voice reached, the voice of announcers reached the ears of those who were involved in revelries, that wine is forbidden, all the wine jars and what they call, huge matka, we call it. Pardon? Pitchers. Yes, pitchers and barrels, yes. They were broken. And it is reported that in one revelry, such revelry where people had gathered and were drinking, right in the midst of that bout, they heard somebody announce that wine is forbidden. And immediately one of them stood up and said, yes, break these pitchers and things and throw this wine away. And some of them who were perhaps already intoxicated under the influence of that, he said that let's make inquiry further. If it was really said by Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it is really forbidden, or maybe somebody is joking. He said, inquiry afterwards, but we are going to break the pitchers now. Suppose Allah has said it, we can't take this risk of declared being disobedient to him even for a temporary, shortest period of time. So first break this and destroy the wine, and then we'll go and make inquiry. And this is exactly what they did. And they did it for the sake of a wine which could not intoxicate. How stupid, how childish. But they go on doing it, and because there is gullible public who would readily swallow such things, and they are ready to do it because they already hate Islam under the influences of the same Orientalists and so on and so forth. And Ridwanu minallah, is this the carnal concept of heaven? Ridwanu minallah is mentioned with Azwaju Mutahara. So it is the pleasure of Allah, in fact, which is the highest form of Muslim heaven as promised to him. Highest form of Islamic heaven or the heaven painted by the Holy Quran promised to Muslims. And of that we'll return later, to that we'll return later, and I'll establish to you that it is the Holy Quran itself which describes the very best, the highest form of heaven to be just the pleasure of Allah's, the obtaining of Allah's pleasure, to be recipient of Allah's pleasure, and that is the most special heaven created for Allah's servants. There's no carnality of any form about it. الذين يقولون ربنا آمنا فاغفر لنا ذنوبنا وقنا عذاب النار. Those who say, O our Lord, إِنَّنَا آمَنَّا, we believe, فَغْفِرْ لَنَا ذُنُوبَنَا, so forgive us our shortcomings and sins. Now they are the same people who have been pursuing their lust in the same direction previously, which are described here. Now they don't say that because we believe that you are going to give us more of this, so we return to you. They say we are abandoning it as bad, as wrong, because zamb is something which is not good in its nature. Zamb has a connotation in its nature of something being bad, whether it is done advertently or inadvertently. But zamb is something which has no quality of husn about it. You know, literally zamb means tail. So zamb, tail is the last bit and the worst bit, and as far as the occupation in human body is concerned, this is the worst bit. And the tail has a quality of following you everywhere. So similarly, zamb is something which is unavoidable, but bad. Bad in the sense that it has never mentioned by the Arabs with a connotation of goodness or excellence. Always something which is bad, but of two types. Zamb can mean sin and crime if it is done advertently, consciously, with intention behind it. And zamb may mean human failings, human shortcomings. So there is no way that one can save oneself totally and entirely from zamb. It is attached to it like an appendix of a tail. It is going to follow man wherever he goes. But some of the zambs would be of the nature of human failings and shortcomings. Some of the zambs could mean also conscious crime. So this is why this word zamb has been used to apply both the criminal of the first degree as well as the innocent prophets of God. So it should be understood in its right context. Whenever the word zamb is applied with reference to prophets, is used with reference to prophets, particularly the Holy Prophet of Islam, it means only human failings, human shortcomings. Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, has never confessed a zamb, so he stands superior. This is one of the claims of the Christians. But they don't understand the true meaning of zamb. This is why they have committed that mistake. Jesus Christ has confessed this human failing, where he says that although the spirit is fresh and requires much more, but the flesh is frail and weak, so I can't do whatever I want to do for your sake, O my Lord. This is Astaghfirullah Rabbi min kulli dhanbin, an expression of the same thing. in a different way, of course, slightly different way, but an admission of failing. So the more one is godly, the more ambitious he becomes as far as his future planning of enacting goodness personally, individually, and collectively, as far as his followers concerned, is concerned. There, he knows his shortcoming in the sense that he wants much more to be done. Much, much more to be done. This is why the Holy Quran has repeatedly referred to this issue vis-à-vis the Holy Prophet of Islam, that we know what you desire, but you can't impose your desire on us or on everybody else. If it were left to you, the entire mankind would suddenly become pious and God-fearing. And because this was the object of his mission too, so he was always oppressed by this constant fear, a constant obsession that he has not been able to discharge his duties to the extent that he would like them to be discharged. So God gave him solace in so many ways. Innama lasta alayhim bi musayyir, innama anta muzakkir lasta alayhim bi musayyir, balligh ma unzila ilayka, and so on and so forth. This is your job, don't go beyond it. Don't be overzealous for the sake of the rest of the mankind. لَعَلَّكَ بَاخِعٌ نَفْسَكَ لَا يُكُونُ مُؤْمِنِينَ. Would you destroy yourself for the sake of those who do not believe? So that was the zamb referred to when it was referred in connection with Hazrat Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, the founder of the Holy Quran, and not the sort of zamb which ordinary people commit. So here also zamb should be understood in this general and wider context. Amana faghfir lana zunubana. Here, if it is referred to ordinary people, it means that these were the zunub which were referred to, which have been mentioned in the earlier verse. Zuyyana lin-nasi hubbu shahawati minan-nisa, being overburdened with such obsessions, being overpowered by the desires and lust of life, we committed sins. And now we understand that this was wrong. This overemphasis and distorted vision of the worldly things was wrong on our part. So we seek forgiveness of you. Waqina azab an-nar, save us from the punishment of fire. Now, what is the heaven of these people? This is now being described. As-sabirina was-sadiqina wal-qanitina wal-munfiqina wal-mustaghfirina bil-ashar. This is what they have been turned into. And is this because of lust for these things? Only postponing the pursuit of these lusts for the hereafter? Such people as are described in this verse could never conceive of any heaven other than the heaven of the pleasure of God, of the Lord. And they become such things as have been described here only after rejection of those qualities which have been discussed earlier. But because already we have overshot the time, inshallah, tomorrow we'll start from this verse. As-sabirina was-sadiqina wal-qanitina wal-munfiqina wal-mustaghfirina bil-ashar. Assalamu alaikum.